Bookie Beatdown coming at you, Paul, Cody, UFC 325 picks and bets, plus the finals of Road to the UFC, a season that we've been following all season, ups and downs in those streets. But I would say we're pretty familiar with the, you know, the four finalists here. So I'm at a couple of fights down there, really looking forward to them. But that'll be at the end of the show. Time codes in the description. Make sure you drop a like. And all that good stuff helps us build the show. But yeah, main event. We got a rematch. Alexander Volkanovski taking on Diego Lopez. Volk, you know, the winner of the last fight, doubled him up, almost tripled him up in significant strikes, is the minus 145 favorite. The comeback on Diego Lopez is plus 125. Something's weird about this one, Coach, because like everything in my being, you know, you watch the previous fight, you think about these guys, and Volkanovski's probably the only issue with him is maybe a little bit of durability issues. We see him knocked out by Topuria and Islam Makhachev, two of the best guys on the damn planet. He did get dropped against Diego Lopez, but like hanging out at this price, pretty low. We know Volkanovski is 37 years old. Eventually, are the wheels going to fall off? It seems like it could be a situation. I will say one thing that's interesting about this fight, and I was looking at like when the ceremonial weigh-ins start, and I'm in Atlantic time, so it said 4:30 in the morning. So I imagine that means 4:30 in the morning on Friday morning. So that would be like Thursday late night is when like this when the actual regular weigh-ins are happening. That's all to say, one thing I could see as an advantage for Diego Lopez in this rematch is that seems to be a large window to rehydrate and get yourself back into gear here. So, you know, the bigger fighter could be a bit of an advantage for Diego Lopez. I don't know. I'm kind of scared of, like, Volk seems so easy that I'm very hesitant to click that button. Where are you at with the main event?
Yeah, listen, you're not wrong at all. On one hand, it feels too good to be true. You mean to tell me that Alexander Volkanovski just fought this guy in his last fight? Now, I get it, it's a year ago, but just for the sake of this argument, he just fought this exact same opponent? It's like, that's correct. It's like, and how did he do in that fight? 49-46 is the widely considered best scorecard for it. He beat him 4-1. How did he lose that one round? He got dropped in a round. He's otherwise winning. He gets knocked down. That scores the round the opposite way. Other than that, he wins the other four rounds. If he doesn't get knocked down, he wins that round too. He wins 5-0 on two scorecards and a 49-46 on one scorecard. So he just beat him. As you mentioned, he almost tripled him up in significant strikes. He, you know, the vaunted Diego Lopez ground game never came into effect because he can't take Volkanovski down. Why is it sitting at minus 145? The last time they fought, Volkanovski was minus 145, I'm pretty sure. Beats him 4-1. Even the knockdown, was he that hurt? He got cut. He got knocked down. It wasn't like his easiest fight in the world. Diego Lopez is a wild man. He brings the pain. But at the same time, I just watched this fight. It was fairly decisive going one way. Reminds me of when Sean O'Malley fought Mrob Dvalishvili. Mrob wins the fight. Wins the first fight. Fairly straightforward. They rematch, and like the line's not crazy. It's like Rob just beat this guy. It's an immediate rematch that nobody really asked for. And because O'Malley's very popular, he's taking action. Well, Diego Lopez is highly popular. He's always a live underdog. He's going to fight for your dollar, and he's extremely dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
That it's hovering there. Well, what are the other things that are maybe causing it to be at this price? Well, one, Alexander Volkanovski is 37 years old. He's not fought in a year, and he's 37 years old. So he's not necessarily fighting the same Diego Lopez. He's fighting a better version of Lopez, who's coming off a win over John Silva, who's still only 31 and presumably getting better. And he's, you know, considered on the decline. So if a lesser version of him shows up versus a version that's improved from Lopez, then it makes it a lot closer. The other thing is Volkanovski's had a number of rematches in his career, and he typically struggles in the second fight. Beat Max Holloway the first time decisively. The rematch, he squeaks out a split decision that a lot of people thought he lost. The first fight with Makhachev, he gives him everything he can handle. The second fight with Makhachev, he gets knocked out. The first fight with Diego Lopez looks lopsided, 49-46. The second one could be a lot closer. Lopez has fought this guy already. He might already have a better read on some of these strikes. Volk, the first fight, he lands 158 significant strikes. But how significant are they? A lot of it's inside low kick. A lot of it's flash to jab. He does land some killer right hands as well. But point being that Lopez knows now I got to keep my volume higher. Well, in his last fight with John Silva, he had landed 74 significant strikes through less than two rounds of action. More significant strikes than he put up in Volkanovski in 25 minutes. So maybe he's figured this part out. Maybe he's going to be able to cause Volkanovski to get uncomfortable and make a mistake. If he makes a mistake, you can knock him out, knee up the middle. 5'11 versus 5'6, knee up the middle is definitely going to be there. The way he throws some of those looping hooks, catches on the end of his shots, his ground game, if he can hurt you, get on top and throw something up, he's a live underdog. Reason I'm going to go with Alexander Volkanovski still, though, is that to say a guy's regressed and he's on the back nine fully is that you got to start watching these regressed performances. And with Volk, they're not there. Oh, I got knocked out by Makhachev in the rematch. Took that fight way too soon after the first fight. I think everyone kind of agrees. The fight with Topuria, one, it's a lot. It's Topuria. He's one of the best guys to do it. Second thing is, yeah, those guys that can sit down on one big shot, stand at his level, stuff some takedown attempts, keep him honest and land that big killer shot. Maybe that's his problem. But Lopez doesn't really fight like a rangy guy. Again, he's 5'11. And the first time he fought Volkanovski landed 158 significant strikes. Then he fights John Silva, who's 5'7. And John Silva finds the mark on him pretty early as well. I watched back that fight a few times. And really, that first round is John Silva's notorious for this. He's a slow starter. He kind of sits there. He daps you up. He smiles. He barks. Doesn't let his hands go. That allows Lopez to get the quick start on him. You rewatch Lopez versus Volkanovski. Volkanovski's not messing around. He's not barking at you with his hands down, inviting you, trying to dap up. He's hands up. He's moving his feet. He's setting traps. Constant work rate. Till you see him lose and look bad and then fight a guy. And then you can make the argument, well, run this thing back. It's not the same outcome. As far as I'm concerned, it's going to be a similar outcome. I could see this thing being 48-47. I still think Volkanovski does enough to get the job done. So, one, I do have Volk, but... two, I don't think he knocks out Lopez, and I don't think he's going to miss Lopez. So it's a Volk by decision play for me personally.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I did see that like Lopez has put in like a new training camp. He's got a new training camp. Volk by decision is plus 170. Don't hate that, I suppose. I mean, if basically just saying that the fight's going to play out the exact same way as it did in the first way. Maybe it's a little bit closer.
Time either. If you're a Lopez guy, this thing ain't going the distance. Lopez could catch Volkanovski. But if you are backing Volkanovski, do you want the minus 135 price tag or a plus 170? And decision is the most likely. Although it's a fight, I get it. Lopez is pretty cast iron for the most part.
Yeah, he seems pretty cast iron. He did change his camp, and I saw him putting in like wrestling at Oklahoma State. Now, that's Diego Lopez. So is that going to help him to, like, get this to the mat? I mean, we saw Volk. Here's the thing I kind of thought about, too, is just, like, I was like, would Diego Lopez be able to get a sub on him? You remember when, like, Volkanovski was as deep into, like, Darce choke against Brian Ortega. I forget off the top of my head.
Oh, boy, it was deep.
It was so deep. And somehow the guy got out of it. It's just, like... What's even a Diego Lopez sub? I mean, it's 7-1, I guess, if you're going to go down that route. Not insane, but at least they're giving you a somewhat of a generous price there. But
if you have an exotic book, and Paul would know these crazy exotic books that sometimes offer this stuff, but if you could find something that was Diego Lopez records a knockdown and wins by submission, and you got a great price on that, that's how I don't think... Spending time at Oklahoma State, oh my God, what a great idea. The thing is that he's 5'11". So his center of gravity is not taking Volk down. What he could do is try to hit a switch and jump on the back, or he could try to create a scramble and latch onto a leg or something like that. But again, even if you grab a leg, this guy's got short legs. You grab a neck, he doesn't got a neck. So you're wrestling, trying to improve your wrestling to take him down so you can use your grappling. I don't know that it's ever going to work. The other problem is that for a guy like Alexander Volkanovski, yeah, like you said, he's defended the submissions in the past. He's, you know, able to scramble. He ends up on top. You're now exerting energy trying to constantly take him down. I think it would have to be a knockdown to submission. You get him hurt. You land knee up the middle. He hits the ground. He takes a reactionary shot that's poor. You grab a guillotine choke and you make it happen. But outside of that, I feel like from a wrestling standpoint, Volkanovski should have him covered. It's just, it's Volkanovski versus Lopez and Father Time, whereas Lopez just needs to capitalize on one mistake, and 25 minutes is a long time to make that mistake.
Benoit Saint-Denis in the co-main event against Daniel, the Hangman Hooker. BSD, minus 350, favorite the comeback on Hooker, plus 285. Your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I feel like an idiot here, but I think I'm going to switch my pick from Benoit Saint-Denis to Dan Hooker. And this might be what I was talking about last week. I don't want to just take these random value plays anymore. It's like there's a lot of value on Dan Hooker, I think. Like outside of it's a home game of sorts and the crowd should be in his favor and they're constantly looking at damage as a big threshold, is that Benoit Saint-Denis is there to get hit. He's not a defensive fighter at all. If you watch back his fight with Mauricio Ruffi, he's stiff moving with his footwork. His hands are low. And he gets the takedown. He smashes him away. His fight with Kyle Prepelic, he's not comfortable on the feet. Kyle Prepelic's getting the better of the exchanges, so he shoots the takedown. Of course, people will remember his fight with Dustin Poirier. Does good early. Has a staff infection that kind of hinders his performance. But as he starts to tire, he's forced to stand. He gets knocked out. Moicano, it's that damage put on him in the first round that wins that first round for Moicano. When we talk about guys that can capitalize on mistakes, this guy makes a bunch of mistakes. Mm-hmm. Now, what bails him out is that, yeah, no, he's got a pretty good gas tank for the most part. He's obviously a durable guy for the most part. And, you know, he can force these grappling exchanges where he's going to get a double underhooks up against the cage, get a body lock takedown, rip you to the ground, start trying to work you from that position. Dan Hooker at 35, you know, kind of in cahoots with the UFC of sorts, has already made some money. If the not best version of him shows up, yeah, maybe this is not a great fight for him. But one, he's going to have not the judges in his favor, but if he can keep this thing close for the plus money that he is, we're alive for a bad decision. We're alive for a close decision. We'd be happy with it. You take him down and you don't just smash him to bits and get the submission. Then again, he's going to be getting the better of you in these exchanges. He's already fought Armin Sarukian. He's already fought Matheus Gamrot. He's already fought Islam Makhachev. He's fought Dustin Poirier and Michael Chandler and Edson Barbosa and Gilbert Burns and Jim Miller. And so he's been in there with a lot of guys. And if Benoit's entire game plan is just, I'm going to out-muscle this guy and throw him around, again, Dan Hooker's a big dude. He's got a lot of time to hydrate himself. He's got the knees up the middle. He's got rangy shots. He kind of looked like he tired a little bit in that last fight with Sarukian. But outside of that performance, everything else of him is a blood and guts glory type of performance. He's going to fight for your dollar. And again, watching back him versus Armin, he lands on the feet. He's doing just fine. Armin shoots these takedowns, and all of a sudden Hooker gets the tie plum, and he's doing a knees up the middle from the tie clinch, and then all of a sudden he's getting taken down. He threatens with two good guillotine chokes. He scrambles back up to his feet, and then eventually Sarukian is dynamic. He's young. He's fast. He's strong. He breaks him down. Benoit ain't Armin Sarukian, right? So if you can get up a few times, start to hurt him. Case in point, Benoit's last fight against he sparks Benil Dariush, but his fight with Mauricio Ruffi, the first round, he takes him down like nothing. The second round, it takes him almost 2 minutes to get him down. Then he gets him down. All of a sudden, Ruffi explodes and ends up on top. Ruffy's gassed and is a quitter, so he just bails out from that situation. But Hooker scrambles, gets back on top, smashes you with a couple elbows. The crowd goes wild. The judges make it 1-1. You're going into the third round versus a guy who's now feeling himself and coming at you. Like, I don't want to get stuck on a Benoit Saint-Denis 3-1 money line ticket. So I'm probably chasing value, and it'll probably be not the PRP pick because there's 14 fights, but it'd be near the bottom. I'm going to take the dog shot on Dan Hooker here to, again, just keep it interesting, keep it close. You are going to get taken down. He's been taken down by better guys than this. He's gotten up against better guys than this. But I'm going to need a motivated version of him. At 35, it's hard to trust that. So he's the play. I don't love it.
Yeah, he'll probably be at, like, the bottom of your PRP
type. near the bottom, yeah. I'm going against Dom Marfan, but he's cost me a bag twice now. So, like, you know, that fading him will be near the bottom, too. Like, there's other stuff that we'll get to later. But this is – I get it. It'll be a tough fight.
I just hate any sort of fight where Dan Hooker has to, like, stuff takedowns because he's not – like, it's just there for the taking over and over and over. I hate – BSD minus 350. I think the fight doesn't go to decision is my favorite play in this fight. Something I will parlay up a little bit. It's like minus 250-ish around the market right now. One, you either get, I mean, BSD, if you go through, you know, his history here, outside of his UFC debut against Zaleski on like short notice, literally every fight has been finished inside the distance, whether it's him or his opponent. He comes at you like a bat out of hell. He's looking for those takedowns, but if he doesn't get them, he tends to fall off a little bit in the second round. He's there to 100% get hit. I mean, I suppose if I was forced to take a money line side at the current prices, it would be Dan Hooker, but I think I'm just going to play it simple on this one and just take the fight doesn't go to decision because it's a Benoit St. Denis fight. Fights will be taking place at local time. It'll be like early afternoon type of thing. It's like 12 hours difference or something over to Australia. Don't quote me on that, but yeah, it's, you know, regular pay-per-view times over here in North America. But I believe it's like they wake up and they're heading to the venue type of thing. Maybe that throws off the Frenchman a little bit. I don't know. It's not too crazy to see some crazy results because of, you know, the amount of travel and jet lag and everything like that heading over there. But Benoit St. Denis typically just doesn't go to the decision. That's where I'm going to be putting my shekels this week. All right, we got Rafael Fiziev taking on the newest teammate of Alexander Volkanovski, Mauricio Rufi, who apparently, a source told me, John Silva unfollowed Mauricio Rufi on Instagram.
Book the fight.
Because he claims he's a nerd still, but he's not going to have the nerds in his corner. He's been training this whole camp in Australia. Interesting fight here because we have seen in Fiziev's last couple of fights a little bit of the ability to get to the hips, get some takedowns. Bahamondes, he was able to do that, get takedowns, kind of edge that fight out. Against Justin Gaethje, Rafael Fiziev got two takedowns in that fight. So, you know, all that time with all those, you know, those greasy Russians down in Thailand, maybe a little bit of wrestling has been rubbing off on Ataman as he gets into the second stage of his MMA career. Rufi, it still seems like it's a big, huge, glaring hole in his game. The takedown defense has been exploited. It's when he's looked his worst. Is working with Volkanovski going to fix that in one camp? I don't know. It's dog or pass, ever so slight dog on Fiziev. And, like, if you have, like, a book that offers, like, takedown props, could be something that's a little bit sneaky this week. Because, like, Fiziev's not known for being a wrestler. But, yeah, I think Fiziev can hang with this guy on the feet. Ruffy, if he wins, will win, like, big, huge, you know, exciting kind of moments in the fight. But veteran savvy, sneak in a takedown at any round and kind of just, you know, scrape by on probably a close decision. Fiziev for me, what about you?
I'm going to go with Fiziev as well, actually. Ruffy was just viewed as like an ultra prospect. Everyone loves him. And we discussed this at length last week. Paddy Pimblett's actually established, but it was just the discussion being that is he overvalued against Justin Gaethje? Yes, because of the win streak, because of the flashiness, because of the everyone's behind you that you're willing to look the other way. And we're all guilty of it. Look at a guy like what Malcolm Wellmaker, right? Everyone's into it. And this guy's sparking out everybody. Razak Abdul Hassan, first two fights in the UFC, both first round knockouts in less than a minute. Guy like Chaos Williams, first two wins in the UFC, both first round knockouts, less than a minute. Then all of a sudden you believe that maybe these guys could contend. Maybe they could knock out anyone in the division. Thibaut Gauthier won last week. It's the same thing. Peyton Talbot, you know, he got fraud checked against Ronnie Barcells. Not really. It's just you feed them a little too much too early. We believe in these guys too much. A guy like Peyton Talbot loses, comes back, he's pretty good. A guy like a Thibaut Gauthier didn't lose, but could have. He's going to come back even better. It's just the natural road of it. Ruffy, to me, exact same thing. His fight in the Contender Series with Raymond Mongondaliev, it's pretty competitive, fine. Right? He wins, and he looks good. But it's not like it's a runaway performance versus a guy that never ended up really making it after that. Then you knock out Jamie Mullarkey, who we'll talk about a little bit later. You know, a lot of prospects have knocked out Jamie Mullarkey. It's kind of the thing to do, but it's a nice win. He beats James Longtop. He got outstruck 90-67 against James Longtop. And so this is kind of where the problems begin for me. He's very flashy. He's got the wheel kick. He's got the cool techniques, very explosive, but he doesn't put in a whole good body of work. He's not very, extensive with his volume. He's not going to put up 100 significant strikes on you. He waits a little bit too long, and then he catches you because he's extremely explosive. So he's got these big techniques. Longtop, a random Peruvian guy who's, I don't want to call him a punching bag, because he got, James Longtop better than anybody. He kicks it on the ACA scene now. He's just tough. That's it. There's nothing good about him. It's a tough Peruvian guy that can take a heck of a punch and can fight for 15 minutes. And yet, he put up quite a bit of significant strikes on Ruffy. This brings you to Bobby Green. And again, it's such a flashy knockout that you don't get to see him beat up Bobby Green for 15 minutes. You don't get to see him in a bad spot or two. You don't get to see him set up all this stuff. You see one big flashy knockout. Well, that knockout's at 2 minutes and 7 seconds of the first round. He had landed 3 significant strikes prior to that wheel kick. Right, he's on pace to land 10 significant strikes that round against Bobby Green. So there's a lot too much waiting. Fazeev's, he's got more volume by the numbers, but not like a runaway amount. The difference is if you want to go punch for punch with Rafael Fazeev, he lands eye-catching stuff, man. He's very, very fast. He throws flashy stuff himself, but he's more of a veteran. He's only 32. He's not over the hill. His best performance is probably going to be in the next 3 fights, if he's not already happened, but just recently. Still in a good version of himself. Paul mentioned him mixing up the wrestling. Listen, I faded him against Ignacio Bahamandez, who's the biggest guy at 155 pounds. Man, this guy's ability to mix it in. Both fights with Justin Gaethje, very competitive. Against Matheus Cameron, he hurt his leg, but the first round he won was very, well, I don't know, it was a good round, but you know what I'm saying? This guy's not out of it. If you want to land 60 and he lands 60, he's going to end up winning the decision. The second thing is that Ruffy's built himself not on putting money in the bank, landing the big leg kicks, slowing him down, not walking him into the right hook, not working to the body. He prides himself on that one big move. Fazeev is the master of the rollback Sanchai style. He's the master of the evading that big technique. This guy's got a lot of fights. He spent time with the best guys in the sport. He's made adjustments to his game that, just catching him with a wheel kick in the head. Like, he's seen a million wheel kicks to the head. And the fact that he's still alive means he's evaded a million wheel kicks to the head. And it'll be a million and one come Saturday night. But his ability to maybe take down Ruffy, who looks suspect in the takedowns. Fazeev, people want to maybe take him down a little bit. Yeah, Ruffy's got a 0% takedown rate. He does not shoot takedowns. He's now, fighting nerds know him. Fighting nerds know his style. Fighting nerds get him 4 nice wins. He loses in brutal fashion, right? Looked way out of it from the second that fight started until the time he got choked out in the second. Now you're going to go with Volkanovski. Well, one, Volk's fight getting ready for a fight, so it's a good idea. 2, it's you want to be in that part of the world to get adjusted, so it's a good idea. 3, you're not going to get a better training partner than Alexander Volkanovski. So that I all get. But Volk's style is not Fazeev's style at all. So you're getting plus money ever so slightly on Rafael, but yeah, that regardless, I just think he wins this fight more often than not. And he's the play for me as well. I think by decision, maybe a 29-28, but it'll be close. It'll be competitive. And Fazeev's going to use that veteran savviness to win 2 of the 3 rounds by small margins, if need be, but secure them and get the win. So yeah, sign me up for slight plus money on Rafael Fazeev as well.
I've been trying to mute in between fights. I got some laundry on there. I don't know if it's picking up on the mic.
I can't hear it. Maybe people
at home can. Nice. That means my microphone is, the laundry room's just over there. It's in that spin cycle right at the end of the wash where it's just like, it's going.
Before it starts doing its little song.
It's going. It's not really that distracting to me. It's just like, I just imagine if it is picking up on the microphone, it would be annoying for the viewers. So, yeah, we move on to the heavyweight division. We got Talison Teixeira, big favorite against Ty Bam Bam Tuivasa. Teixeira, -370 favorite to come back on Tuivasa, +295. This was like a few years ago. It would be really, really tempting to pull the trigger on Bam Bam. But the big question with him at this point is, one, took some time off, and I saw a little interview with him saying that, like, he just needed rest. He needed a break. There's pictures that have floated of, like, it looked like he kind of bloomed up a lot after that last fight. It seemed like maybe he wasn't coming back. I don't know. Heavyweight's an old man's game. Like, so he's still, 32 years old?
He's very young for the division.
Got lots of time. We did see Teixeira lose against Derek Lewis. Whether that stopped, I mean, he cheated by grabbing the fence to get back to his feet. But, like, the stoppage was pretty suspect. I will say that. Heavyweights, it's hard to pull the trigger on Taliesin Teixeira at minus 370. But I just have no idea if, like, Ty's committed to the game, how hard he's training at this stage in his career. So give me the big old Brazilian, but ain't too excited about laying minus 370 chalk at heavyweight. Your thoughts here?
Yeah, well, I'm mostly on the same page. Like, when you think about, well, it's a greasy heavyweight fight, so why not just back the underdog? It's like, well, that was kind of the theory last week in part with a guy like Derek Lewis. He's the underdog. Well, why wouldn't he swing for it? And Ty's the same boat. Could Ty knock out this man? 100% I could knock this guy out. Well, why not back him? Well, you know, he's not fought in over a year and a half almost, and he's on a 5-fight losing streak. Well, he's still only 32 years old. Yeah, I seen pictures of him. It looked like he was 340 pounds. Yep. So now you're in shape, and like, he used to play rugby, a semi-pro rugby player, but he was extremely explosive and fast on his feet for a big man. You look at his career highlights, some of them he lost, but he knocked down Cyril Gane, like, gave him a go early in that fight. He's got wins over Derek Lewis. He's got wins over Stefan Struve or Greg Hardy, or I don't know, maybe a lot of them aren't the most impressive of wins, but when he wins, it's in spectacular fashion. Is his cardio good? No, it's a bit of an issue, but Taliesin Teixeira's never been out of the first round. So if this gets to a second round, Ty may be at a disadvantage, but this 6'7" lumbering Brazilian guy who's never seen a second round could also be in a bad spot. Being the shorter man, you know, get it, step on the inside, get to the target. As we talked about, he got a win over Stefan Struve. But, you know, outside of that win, he largely struggles against tall guys. His fight against Alexander Volkov, 6'7", he really never could get to the mark. And his fight with, who's the other big guy he fought? I fought a few guys that were plus 6'5" or above, but to me, it just seems like Ty's going to have to step in, eat a shot to give one. And although he can take a heck of a punch, maybe that's why he just didn't want to do it anymore. He lost his love for it. You don't really want to get punched in the face anymore. Now you're taking a year and a half off. Now you're not in the gym. Now you balloon up your weight and you get back in the gym to get back in shape. And as you start to get back in shape, you say, yeah, I think I can do this again. I'll take one more. And even though you're on a 5-fight losing streak, and a lot of these fights, it's not like he just loses flat. He's disinterested. The split decision against Yerzino Rosenstruck, who possibly scored that fight for Ty Tuivasa? Find that judge and hang him. That's a little extreme. Find that judge and fire the man, because there's no chance he won two rounds. Zero chance. Zero. Marcin Tybura, as soon as he got taken down, he rolled over. Alexander Volkov, as soon as that Ezekiel choke, who gets caught in Ezekiel chokes, especially when you got a neck like a barrel of whiskey. Like, who gets caught with an Ezekiel? It wasn't even Alexei Oleinik's Ezekiel, but all the same, he's quitting in these fights. His fight with, you'd have to go a little bit further back, with Sergei Spivak, is the same thing. It's taken down 5 times in the first round, and then just kind of says, all right, I'm done with this in the second. So I find hard, even with the nice plus money that's behind him, I would find it hard to back him. Now, if you are going to back him, then I think you back him by KO. How is he going to win this fight? Well, this big 6'7 guy that just got early stoppage against Derek Lewis, but Derek nailed him in the first 20 seconds of the fight, stepped in, cracked him. How good did Derek Lewis look last weekend? Not good at all. But even this version, 40-year-old Lewis, still found the mark 20 seconds into the fight against this guy. And even if Herzog doesn't stop the fight, Lewis still had his backside and was going to bomb him with 5 more. This guy might not be no good. Never been out of the first round. Fighting a absolute fan favorite. You don't think on a UFC pay-per-view on Paramount, pay-per-view in Canada, Paramount in the States, you don't think they want to see Ty Tuivasa dead a guy and drink beer out of a shoe? So yeah, if Ty's going to win, he's going to win by knockout. If Teixeira's going to win, probably by knockout. So I think you take the under. It's like the fight does not go the distance. And I know it's juicy, but taking Teixeira money line is pretty juicy as well. Like, there's not that big of a difference. This covers on both sides.
It's minus 1,000, Cody.
Oh, it is. That's for the under 2.5, or the fight doesn't go the distance.
Fight doesn't go the distance.
Oh yeah, there's no.
And then they're only offering 1.5. And Ty does have a knack for getting to 1.5. So, and that's pretty juice too. It's minus 270, minus 300 to the under 1.5. So, Not exactly like shooting fish in a barrel on that one there.
If you look at Teixeira, and it's very ballooned up, but like his fight with Arthur Lopez on the Contender Series, he lands 29 significant strikes in less than 2 minutes. And against Toffa, it's just a right away, elbows in the face, 8 significant strikes in 35 seconds. So his average is 12, almost 13 significant strikes per minute. You know, is Ty going to take 7.5 minutes of that? You know, is Ty going to get 120 strikes and then roll over? Like, maybe I hate under 1.5, but I just feel like this fight could go either way. But whoever wins it is probably going to win it pretty spectacular fashion and fairly early.
Big boys.
Lord hates a coward, I'm told. So I'm going to take Ty. Nah, I don't know. Come back to me for the PRP picks at the end of the show, and I'll make up my decision before then. You're just chasing value on Ty. It's not a smart pick. Paul gave you good advice. He doesn't love Teixeira, but he's still siding with him because it's more logical. If you're a value boy, though, yeah, Ty's one of these guys that I do fully see a path of victory for him. It's just hard to back a guy who's on a 5-fight losing streak, who's not competed at all in a year and a half, and who recently weighed as much as 340 pounds. You know, you work all week for your money. You're gonna lose it on something like that. There's 13 other fights to get at. Maybe you don't go with this one.
Yeah, Ty's involved in that, like, it's like some sort of like rugby league thing where it's just like they basically just like hand the ball to people and then they run into each other in the middle of a field. Like, it's pretty violent. He's like some sort of like investor in that, I think. Like, it seems like that's like social media posts, what he's focusing more on. It's hard to just know like how much the guy's been training, but it's heavyweight. How hard do you really have to train? You either land the big heater missile or you don't. Yeah, I don't know.
It's, yeah, that's exactly.
It's tough to back tie, but we'll see where the market goes, man.
When you like, talk about these, like,
I can't be touching Talisman Teixeira -370. Like, everything in my being, those heavyweights, tells me that's a horrible, horrible way to go about your business.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. No, these Samoan Aboriginal guys, just like Mark Hunt, he was 6-7, I think, when he debuted, he was 6-7 when he went on his little run, beat Ben Rothwell in the UFC. It's like, when you're that short, he's not even a short guy, but when you're that compact and you can generate that much power and you are fast, you can beat anybody. You can absolutely beat anybody. But they have not done him any favors for the most part in that he's making money. And all of a sudden it's, hey, fight Jarzino Rozenstruik. Rozenstruik's a former title challenger. And Marcin Tybura, Polish champion and, you know, former top 10 guy, I guess. Volkov, been to the highest point of the mountain. Sergey Pavlovich, top of the mountain. Cyril Gane, former champion. Derek Lewis has fought for a belt. It's not like they've given him any pass, but largely it's like you're too fast, too dynamic. Cyril Gane, so smooth on his feet. Sergey Pavlovich, so strong and can do everything. Volkov, so large and just an absolute surgeon with his striking. Marcin Tybura is just a winner. The guy just wins. Jarzino Rozenstruik's got the death touch. Taliesin's got none of those things. He's 6'7" with an 83-inch reach. That's pretty badass. But, like, I don't know. He's beaten far less guys. He's not showing you a wrestling game. He's not showing you a grappling game. He's not showing you an ability to lose. Cyril Gane got dropped in the first round. He made adjustments and ended up winning later away. This guy's never shown you he's going to get up off the canvas and make adjustments. So you don't back a guy like that at heavyweight at -370. But because we got to make straight picks, I get it. Paul's on Teixeira. I think I'm just going to take Tuivasa. But,
not
you know.
Really on Teixeira.
We make picks
for the purposes of the show.
But Dogger Pass.
I ain't making picks. Like, I'm not betting every single fight on a 14-fight UFC card. It just seems like a good way to lose money these days.
Yeah, there's a lot of good fights on this weekend that aren't UFC related as well. So again, between the 100 possible betting spots you could take, taking two heavyweights that the value is wonky, and not if you're tied to a Tuivasa guy, but you're not going to back the favorite, the underdog.
Risk on the other side. That's where it kind of comes into.
So much risk, so much uncertainty. No one can look you in the eye and say Ty's going to come out and have a career best performance and he's reinvigorated. You don't know that. You don't. He's made improvements. Yeah, let me see the improvements. So this is his chance to show himself out. And if he wants it, then he'll have the opportunity. But I don't want to lose money one way or the other. So he maybe passes your smart play here for purposes of the show. I'll take Bam Bam Ty Tuivasa, but oh my god.
See, like, why would you force it when you have Quill and Salkill taking on Jamie Mullarkey in the next fight? Jamie Mullarkey, sure, he can wrestle. He can wrestle a little bit. Yep. But his chin has just failed him over and over, and we have seen Sal killed in multiple fights here in the UFC. Yeah, I know Ashmuz was able to go the distance with him, but like the other two, it's just like he's landing nukes. You go back, you watch some of his regional tape. He's got some grappling to his game as well. You know, he subbed Don Marfan twice in like Eternal MMA or whatever. Rear naked choke both times. But Malarkey's chin has just been over and over. Like, the guy's got half decent wrestling, but I think he's losing physicality in this matchup against Salkild. And I don't think Malarkey's going to be able to take the shot. Salkild is like minus 900. But if you go over into the props section here, Salkild by KO is like minus 125. I got money on that. Where are you at with this fight?
Yeah, Jamie Malarkey's not like super old or anything. He's only 31. It's the damage. It's the accumulation. And he's been in the ringer with a lot of guys that have been able to topple him over. The UFC's not really done him much of a favor in that they realize the level he's at and they'll give him a win or two or a winnable fight or two. And then they throw him in there against the upper echelon or even just fringe top 15 guys. And it, not only does he lose, but as Paul alluded to, he can't really take much of a punch and he ends up getting knocked out. Nazrat Haqparast is not known for his power, like at all. He just doesn't knock really anybody out. He knocks out Jamie Malarkey, two knockdowns, and absolutely sparks him cold. So Malarkey's not even just like he's got a bad chin, he's fighting murderers. You know, a Mauricio Ruffy, you can make the argument, he's very explosive. He hits you, it's going to cause a lot of damage. But yeah, Nazrat Haqparast knocks him out. Muhammad Naimov knocks him out. Jalen Turner is a bit of a hitter, but he knocks him out. That becomes the knock on you. Now, what's good about him is, again, same thing Paul's saying, is that he can grind a little bit. He can take you down a little bit. But he's 6 feet tall at 155 pounds. He's a big guy. And what the part of the reason he can't take a great punch is because he has these like big weight cuts to make 155. By comparison, you got a guy in Quinlan Salkill who's 5-6 years younger than him, and he's also 6 feet tall. So when you talk about, well, are you going to get to his hips and wrestle him? He's just as big as you. And if we're being honest with each other, Quinlan Salkill's wrestling appears to be better than him as well. I mean, 8 takedowns against Yanal Ashmuz, 9 takedowns against Gage Young. So far, he has a 100% takedown defense between Contender Series and the UFC. Nobody's been able to take him down. You know, Ashmuz can wrestle a little bit. He went 0-6. So Quinlan can wrestle, man. That's part of his game, is he's mixing it all up. And what you're seeing in his last fight against Nazrat Haqparast, I'm not using MMA math. One guy got sparked stiff in 2 minutes, and one guy smoked the guy with a beautiful head kick and basically stretched him out of the building in a couple minutes. But you see that this guy's well-rounded. He's only 26 years old, going to be constantly getting better. He's only getting more comfortable in the UFC setting. He's coming off a $50,000 bonus where he almost deaded a guy. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, he is scoring 9-8-9 take. Even in the Contender Series against Gage Young, I had him, but I thought, this kid's going to gas. He's going to gas. He just keeps going. And he ends up winning. His fight with Ashmuz, whatever, the longer it goes, he seems to be okay. But you referenced two fights with Don Marfan. If you want to watch them back, or people at home watch them back, he's losing the first round against Don Marfan. The second, the third round, Dom is gas because this guy does not accept positions. You want to wrestle him? Great. I'm going to wrestle you back. And then if we can stay standing, he's long, he's rangy, he gets to the target, he's a lot fresher, he's going to find the mark at some point. He's minus 900, what do you want to know from me? But, you know, there's a good chance here that he's going to find the target and knock out Jamie Malarkey sometime in midway through the second. Maybe you take an under 1.5. I'm not an under 1.5 guy. But if you don't want to bet the minus 9-1, the 9-1, if you don't want to get behind that and you're not just using it for parlay pieces, then you're probably going to chase this knockout prop, which is not that much better, but his most likely win condition. I like this kid. I think he's getting better. I faded him a little bit against Haqparast last time out, thinking Nazrat would have a lot of veteran savvy. And Nazrat Haqparast has never been knocked out in his career. Mm-hmm. So when this kid busts on him, it's a kick to the head. I get it, but I like him. I like him a lot. And 9-1, whatever. I'm not telling you any new info, but I think this kid does good in the spot and rolls. So he's my pick.
All right, we've got Billy Elekana taking on Junior Taffa. Elekana minus 255 favorite to come back on Taffa. Plus 215. Who you got here?
I mean, it's an opportunity to fade a Taffa. So I don't think you're ever going to not take the spot. And again, whatever. He's kind of at home-ish. This is Australia. He's from New Zealand. But the crowd will likely be behind him. He's got a fun striking style, but he ain't it. You know, they'll always reference his brother's a UFC fighter. But his brother's not good. Justin Toff is no good. And when you look at Junior, his whole thing was that he was a glory kickboxer, at least. You know, he had fought Benjamin Agdegbui, but he got TKO'd in the second. And he had fought Jamal Ben Sadiq, but he had gotten TKO'd in the second. And overall, he's only actually 3-4 in glory kickboxing. But there's this idea that similar to a Israel Adesanya or similar to a Alex Pereira, that you can come over with his kickboxing base and be an elite kickboxer and make it. And yes, you can. I just don't think that he's an elite kickboxer. He's not a glory world champion. He was 3-4 with the organization. And so far in his UFC run, it's just not really been inspiring. Against Muhammad Usman, that's at heavyweight. He weighs 255 pounds. He gets held up against the cage. Against Marcos Rogério de Lima. Bro, didn't you say you were a kickboxer? How come Rogério de Lima's cooking you on the feet? Gets TKO'd. Valter Volker, leg lock. You won't fault him too much for that one. Sean Sharaf. Sean Sharaf beats his ass the whole first round. Sean Sharaf took the fight on 3 days' notice. Gasses. Toffa wins. Tuco Tokos, not really known for his wrestling. 5 takedowns. And it did look like he was about to knock out Tuco at the end of the third and at the beginning of the second. And then all of a sudden, it's like Tuco's so gassed, he's about to fall over. Then all of a sudden, Paul, Junior Toff is more gassed than Tuco Tokos is, and he gets arm triangled. There's been no redeemable qualities here. He's either getting knocked out himself, his striking's not elite, his wrestling is obviously not elite. And for the record, all of those prior 5 fights for the UFC were at heavyweight. His fight with Tuco Tokos was his light heavyweight debut. He cut 40 pounds to make the weight class. He gassed out pretty bad. Tuco's out wrestling him. And his world-class striking can't get it going because he can't grapple. So this is his second time cutting to 205, which maybe it's going to be better. But also, he walks around. His natural weight is 230, 240, 245. They are big weight cuts. He's not good, even if he makes the weight class. And with Billy Alacana, who's also not great. Billy Alacana as an amateur has wins over Brian Battle, Sullivan Cully. As a pro, had fought for LFA, fought some decent guys. His losses, guys like Bogdan Guskov or Daniel Compton, they're not bad. They're pretty not bad level of talent. He's not good. But when you compare him versus Bogdan, geez, he took his back early. He did okay, but it's short notice. It's a UFC debut. His fight with Ebo, nothing happens, but he's smart enough to do a little more than Ebo and wins the decision. His fight with Kevin Christian, he looked good. Knocks him down. Striking looked on point. Gets the submission. He's been in Las Vegas for a long time. He's trained with all the best guys in the sport. He's grown up on that scene. He was supposed to be a good prospect, and it doesn't look like he's going to be a world beater, but he's going to be one of your gatekeeper to the top 20, 25 type guys. And Junior Toff is not good. So as far as the striking goes, Junior is a better striker than Billy Alcana, but not by by a good amount, but not that by such an amount that Billy's just going to get beat up for 15 minutes or that Billy's just going to get knocked out. I think Billy uses his big old jab, stays at the outside, causes this guy to work. As soon as Junior works, he's going to tire. And as soon as he tires, you take over. I do feel like at some point, Billy gets him to the ground and grabs a submission. He's got a good rear naked choke. He's got a good back take. He got on Guskov's back, almost took the choke. He got on Kevin Christensen's back, got the rear naked choke. If you have a book that gives you like a submission specific type prop, I think at some point he ends up on Junior Toffa. He lands a little bit of ground and pound. Junior Toffa gives up his back. He grabs the rear naked choke. Does it happen in the first, second, and third? I'm not quite sure. I think the second, let him tire out first, then get him down. But it's also Billy Alacana, so you're not going to load him up at the top of your tickets this week because he's not great. It's just this is a good style for him. It's a good matchup for him. Even though he's the away fighter and the time zone might mess him up, as long as the outside factors don't play that much in, I think he gets a victory some way or another. So I'll take Billy Alacana.
Yeah, I don't have that much to add there. It always feels weird, like with Alacana being that big of a favorite, but Guskov had to land a lot on him to get him out of there in round two. It was almost like a sympathy in round two there. It's like he had battered him to get him to that point. But Alacana by sub, maybe in round two, is kind of how I kind of see this fight playing out as well. Taffa over and over, and the move to 205 didn't change it. Probably makes that gas tank even shorter, to be perfectly honest. Just over and over, just kind of gets tired, gets gassed, and gets finished in as the fight plays on. Not a great look over and over in his fights. It's just kind of the same thing. It's like he'll have success early. If you want to bet live, maybe Elkana's a better live bet to get into it, because Tafa could land some big shots early and get out to a big lead. But yeah, Salibar might he just wilted as the fight played on against Hugo Tokos. I mean, we see it over and over with this guy. It's just like he'll have some success early in the fight, and it's just like if he doesn't get you out of there in that first like 3.5 minutes, he's cooked. So yeah, not too much to add there. Same side as you, and Elkana by sub is my official prediction. We got Kamaruson taking on your favorite fighter, Cody Bumdidge, given all Cody's a bad name.
I know. What the hell?
Rouston -360. Bumdidge +295. Your thoughts here?
I think Rouston absolutely cooks him. Yeah. Do I love the money line? Well, like I was hoping to get a better price. And if you're one of these people that like soft limits and early in the week, or not early in the week because it's a pay-per-view, but if you got it a few weeks ago, you know, then maybe you got a better number. But at this number, it's like I'm just going to have to bite the bullet and die on the hill that Cam Rouston will beat up Cody Brundage. If Cody Brundage can somehow cause Cam to get disqualified, maybe that's a path of victory for him. If he can get a no contest, then I suppose I'll lose the value off my he's so good at both of them. I mean, he's an absolute squirrel, man. He finds a way to somewhat just do the bare minimum and then put himself in a bad spot. And then as soon as the opportunity is presented for a way out, he takes it. And I think that's the reason why when you talk about a guy that's giving Cody's bad name, why you say it's him. From a fight standpoint, Brundage has fought a lot of guys that I got respect for. And this guy's a UFC fighter who now has, I'm just going to bring it up, he has 13 fights in the UFC. So like, how could you not respect this guy? And it's like, I've never seen a guy with 13 fights in the UFC just look for a way out as much as he does. And so, you know, like I watch interviews. I'll you want to do an interview? I watch an interview. And so I'm watching some stuff on Cody Brundage, and it really seemed like he was like, I'm a family man. And he is, he's with Amanda Cooper. She fought in the UFC as well. They got a child together, and he's like, I'm a family man. So I don't travel far away from my training camps. And when I do leave for training camps, I'm always feeling bad. And, you know, it's dawned on me that I'm never going to get to the next part of my career unless I start being more selfish. But that's just not who I am. So, yeah, let's roll the dice and hope for the best. And it's like, yeah, this is a guy that's admitted I'm not putting my best foot forward. And he's got a wife and he's got a kid. And I wouldn't say he's wealthy and doesn't need the money, but he's mostly going out there to protect himself and his health so he can return home. And that's fine. It's just not someone I'm ever looking to back. When we talk about these, why would you back Dan Hooker? Dan Hooker's going to give you the best he's got. Why would you back a Ty Tuivasa? Ty will maybe roll over, but it'll be like Derek Lewis last week. Lewis rolled over after he tried his damnedest to get a KO real quick. Bundage, meanwhile, it's like, yo, I wrestled in college. Okay, can you go put a wrestling clinic on this guy for 15 minutes and win a decision? No. I got a little power in my
theory room. He could, but he just won't.
Yeah, he trains at altitude. He spent a lot of time over in Denver. He's got a college wrestling background. His right hand's got some decent power, but I mean, the examples are just there through and through. It's like his fight with Dolce Ilunga-Mbule shows a little bit of heart, but he's getting sparked and then he falls on a guillotine choke and gets it. His fight with Mikey O, he rolls over. His fight with Rodolfo Vieira, he won the first round. He knocked Rodolfo down. In the second round, he pulled guard on a guillotine choke.
He jumped Gilly.
Get out of there.
I'm Rodolfo Vieira. Out of here.
You know, his fight with Cedric Dumas, the fight was 15 minutes long. Cody Brundage landed 3 significant strikes over 15 minutes. He lost. He got outstruck 17-3. He's the one with the takedowns. He had 2 takedowns in that fight. He landed 3 significant strikes. His fight with Jacob Malkoon, he got Jacob Malkoon disqualified because otherwise he's about to get 10-8'd or TKO'd. You know, the Abdul Razak Alassane, he gets a no contest. The Mansoor Abdul Malik, he gets them to roll it back to a majority draw or something stupid. Last time against McConico, to be honest with you, I kind of thought he won that fight. But the universe is like, dude, no more. We're done with this. That they gave it to McConico. And so therein lies the problem. He just lost to Eric McConico. His fight with Mansoor Abdul Malik, it was close and competitive, I guess, that nothing happened. His fight with Julian Marquez, he's a whisker away from getting knocked out. The ref bails him out by putting the mouthpiece back in. Mm-hmm. This, you look at it all, you don't want to be mean, right? But if you're trying to say, okay, he lost his last one, Mansoor, it was originally ruled a loss, Julian Marquez, he could have lost, Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, he lost, Bo Nickel, he lost, Zach Reese, he powerbombed on his head, Jacob Malkoon, he lost, Dumas lost, Rodolfo lost, Michael Oleksychuk, he lost. He's 1-9 when you really think about it over that 10 stretch.
Even the Reese fight was like, he was like locked into a triangle and then slammed him. It's just like, if that slam doesn't knock out Reese, does the choke get sunk in? Possibly. So it's like in an alternate universe, he could be on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, a 10 yeah. fight losing streak. He would not be in the UFC.
And it's just been the way Lux had it. It's like, well, he lost one, he won one, he lost one, but then there's a draw, but then they won one, but then there's a no contest. They should have cut this guy 4 fights into his run. And you know me, I'm going to talk smack about him literally every time he fights for the last number of years now.
Yeah.
But it's like, the reason that they don't cut him is like, well, it's hard to cut a guy who's coming off. He got headbutted and there's a no contest or a draw. Or Malkoon got DQ'd. You're not gonna cut a guy, he just won a fight by DQ. Like, I don't know, he finds a way. He's a squirrel with his little nut, and they finds a way to just keep getting by the harsh winters. He survives. Does this make him good? No, but it makes him survive. Now why did I think he beat McConico? He had a little success with the wrestling. Why won't he have that same success with Cam Roston? Cam Roston is giant. They tell you he's 6'3", but he's not 6'3". This guy's a lot bigger. He's got 78-inch reach on him. It's huge. Not only that, because he's so big, and you can watch footage and say, well, he's not super technical. He's big. He's like a Rainer de Ritter. Some of the stuff he's doing on Robert Whittaker with the step and knee, it looks flimsy. No way a boxing coach is telling him to throw punches like that. Don't matter. Big. Makes it work. And that's the same thing here with Cam Roston. He's a big body. He makes these techniques work. The knees up through the middle, shots over the top, uses some of that range at times, and he's got good cardio. So when you saw him in the Contender Series versus Torrance Finney, he broke Torrance Finney's nose in the third round, busted him up, actually had a good third round. Finney took him down 10 times in that fight. Roston would not be held down. His cardio checked out, his get-up game checked out. Versus Brandon Holmes, Brandon Holmes is not good, and so Cam Roston smokes him out of there and makes it look good. Holmes just won on the regional scene. You know, I shouldn't say he's not good. He's not UFC level right now, but he's not terrible. And then that last fight with Petrosky. Now, mind you, Petrosky shot 0 takedowns, but Petrosky is just like Brundage. About 6 feet tall, former college wrestler, don't got a deep gas tank, don't got deep durability, don't have big volume, and try to get by on just landing a takedown or two and landing 40 strikes, 50 strikes. Yeah, but that ain't going to work against Cam Roston. He's got way more volume. One, he can knock you out. If this fight stays standing prolonged period, Cam Roston can put you down. If he doesn't put you down, he's just going to outland you. You got tripled up by Cedric Dumas in a fight you were on top of him for the most part. And so, you're not out kickboxing him for 15 minutes. If you take him down, he's going to hold him down. Now, if Finney's not doing it, Finney's got a decent gas tank. If Finney's not doing it, I really don't think Brundage is doing it. And again, if you're looking for violence, and you're looking for damage, it's the number one scoring criteria now. You got Cam Roston's at home. It's a home game of sorts. I always say, you know, it doesn't matter if you're Australian or New Zealand. That's your part of the world. They want to see somebody fight. They don't want to see Cody Brundage flop and say he got hit in the back of the head and say he got kicked in the groin and he needs the full 5 minutes and grab the cage and need be to put himself in a good spot. I don't want to see it. The fans don't want to see it. And so even if Brundage does get a takedown, but Cam Roston can land 5, 6, 7, 10 strikes on the feet prior to that, he'll win this fight on a greasy decision, right? Cody Brundage needs to finish to win because he's not going to outwork you. He needs to finish you or he needs to get you DQ'd. That's the only way this thing's going to go down. Yeah, not betting on Cody Brundage. Definitely betting on Cam Roston. Just, you know, do I put him at the top? Do I put him on the second line? He's probably on the first two lines. I can't let my dislike for Cody Brundage blind me, Paul. I'm snow blind. But no, I think this is a really good style clash for Roston. I think Brundage is going to have trouble getting him down, have trouble holding him down. And then when he fails to take him down and hold him down, he's going to get outworked on the feet. Either gets knocked out or he gets outworked. Don't see it going a whole lot of other ways than that. So yeah, for me, it's Cam Roston.
Yeah, official prediction, Cody Brundage by DQ.
If you can bet that and they got you a crazy price, it's always live.
It would be way too short. It would be way too short, and then probably still hit. Like that's the way that this would go. Because like you'd be like, well, like mathematically, like how many times? But we've said that so many times. This guy's like, how many times can this guy find a way to like make a fight? One thing we have to give Cody credit for is he knows all of the rules. He knows how to go to the commission afterwards and get things overturned as well. He is a master of disaster when it comes to finding that little edge. That's his edge in damn MMA. Right. He knows the rules better than anybody. And if you break them on his ass, you're going to pay.
Because most people are like, what's the game plan? It's like, hey, we're going to do X, Y, and Z to keep the fight standing. We're going to do X, Y, and Z to get the fight to the ground. For him, it's like, we're going to do X, Y, and Z to get this guy. This is the game plan. Okay, all right. I'm going to come out like a barn on fire for the first two rounds. First round and a half. Then, the second this guy lands an eye poke, I'm going to say, I can't see. We're going to go to a technical decision, and I won the first round and a half. It's like, I don't think anybody else thinks like that. Cody Brundage does. He'll get you DQ'd. He will get you on a technical decision. He will get you on a draw. He will file an appeal with the commission after the fact, which we don't care about because we're just betting that night. But Paul mentioned he knows the rules. Yeah, he's got a second career on the table. Fighter advocate. He knows he can go to the commission on your behalf. He knows the rules. So, yeah, hopefully Roastin knows the rules enough not to break them and get himself DQ'd. But outside of that, let's roll with a win here.
I am interested in your next take here on this next fight. It's a battle of your boys, really.
I know.
Jacob Malkoon taking on Torres Finney, minus 145 for Malkoon. Finney can be added for plus 125. Malkoon's been off for like a year and a half now. Apparently, he had some sort of like back injury. That's a little bit troublesome. Finney coming off of a pretty ugly Robert Valentine split decision win. But, you know, Torres is still undefeated. They gave him the hard route to get to the UFC. He had to go on Contender Series three times until they gave him somebody who was a big enough of a bum that would just roll over and he was able to get a finish. But he's a bit of a decision machine, kind of two decision machines going on here. And the big question that like really is what happens when these two guys clash and start wrestling with each other? Because is there much tape out there on Torres Finney getting taken down in control? Because I haven't seen it. Where are you at with this fight?
Yeah, there's not. Okay, I'm going to just be fully upfront on you on this one, is that I will end up taking a pass. The bet that I'm going to go with is the over 2.5, which is minus 175. Don't take fight goes the distance because there's only like a 15-point difference. Like, it wasn't a big enough difference to chase that last 2.5 minutes. And if this fight is going to end, it's going to end in the last 2.5 minutes. Someone gets tired and makes a mistake. But for the most part, the over 2.5 is minus 175. That's the best path I liked about it. I sent Torin a message when this fight, not going to announce, maybe like a week and a half ago, I was talking to him for a little bit, and he agrees. He's like, I think this is an excellent style clash for me. Torrance is 5'8". But Jacob Malkoon's only 5'9". So compared to Torrance fought Cam Roastin, 6'4", right? Compared to Jacob Malkoon, this is a good height advantage. Jacob Malkoon's got no knockout wins. He's got very little in the regard of high-level technical striking. You know, people would say he's Robert Whittaker's BJJ coach. That's fair. Do you want to know how many career wins he has by submission? Zero. So he's not a huge submission threat. He's really not a big knockout threat. His win over Andre Petrosky knocked himself out, right? That this guy doesn't pose a whole lot of problems. He's basically my size. He's got a very similar game plan to me, which is just wrestle. He's got endless cardio, which is something that Finney, most fights in his career, has had. And honestly, Paul mentioned that Jacob Malkoon's my boy. He is. I've never been against Jacob Malkoon. I tell everybody who's willing to listen, which is nobody other than the dog, that if Jacob Malkoon could finish people, you know what they'd call him? Anthony Hernandez. He's got the best cardio. He just keeps going and going and going. But Anthony Hernandez can choke you out and knock you out as well. That makes him dangerous. Malkoon is mostly a decision guy. Finney, my boy. So it's disingenuous for me to sit here and say, bet against Finney. Finney's my guy. I'm not betting any of my money against him. This is my genuine, my friend. He's my boy. And on the flip side of that, Jacob Malkoon, I never met Jacob Malkoon. So it's also disingenuous to say, yeah, my boy's going to whip his ass. It's a really good fight. But when you look at Finney, the knock on him that people, not myself, other people will give him, is that he's a bit of a decision guy. He's just holding on to Robert Valentin. It's an awful decision. And the first two fights on the Contender Series against Cam Rosen and Pena Alimov, it's not Pena Alimov. You know what I'm talking about, though. Not the most entertaining fights, maybe. They call him a decision guy. And Jacob Malkoon is a decision guy. The over 2.5 rounds, it's not even 2-1. It's -175. This is the way to go, 100%. If Finney can get his game going and he can out-wrestle Jacob Malkoon, awesome. And it's possible. If that happens, is he knocking out Jacob Malkoon? Is he submitting Jacob Malkoon? No. And if Jacob Malkoon gets his wrestling going, is he knocking out Torrence Finney? Well, no one's done that before, and Malkoon's not a knockout guy. Is he submitting Torrence Finney? Well, he's got zero career wins by submission. Torrence Finney has no neck. Torrence Finney's 1 inch shorter, but he's got a 2-inch reach advantage over Jacob Malkoon. And neither guy really puts up 100 significant strikes landed. So this has got all your makings of like a classic tit for tat. Not much happens. Lots of wrestling goes on. 2.5. We're hitting the over all day long. Fight goes the distance. Probably. But on my main book, it's -160. I'm not going to chase 15 points on a 2.5 minute. So for me, I just load up on the over 2.5. That's the way I see that. What I will say is with Jacob Malkoon, offensively, the guy can wrestle for sure, but he only shows 20% takedown defense. So like Brandon Allen took him down twice. Cody Brundage took him down. Andre Petroski took him down, but they weren't able to hold him down. Torrens could likely take him down, and he will also not hold him down, but Torrens may just keep taking him down. That's kind of how he fights at his best. And the last thing I will say kind of in favor of Torrence Finney is you got one guy's been off for almost 2 years. He's been off since April, right? So he's 22 months away from his last fight, 22 months removed. And he's coming off a massive back surgery. And now that guy's going to come in as good as he was in 2023 versus a Torrence Finney that Finney fought Yuri Panferov, my mistake, in October. Then he fought again in August to Cam Rosten. Then he fought again in that 2024 on a different season, but against Abdellah El Remy. Then he makes his debut in April against Robert Valentin. He'd fought lots. Like, he didn't really have much of a break. There's one fight on the regional scene against Tyson Jeffries in the mix as well. Point being that he had 5 fights in the span of a year, right? You're trying to stay as active as you can to get back on the Contender Series. They made him fight 3 times. When you look at that, the fact that his break, he's almost certainly going to come in as a fresh, reinvigorated, with a few more skills in his pocket. Malkoon might be stiff. He might drop the first round sheerly off ring rust. His explosiveness might not be that good. He was showing 20% takedown defense with a good get-up game 2 years ago. His back is not 100%, and he's not fought in 2 years. His endless cardio, if it's not still endless, there's a lot of things that could go bad for Jacob Malkoon. You know what, hell, I'll just... the over 2.5 is the way to go. I guess I will take Finney... purpose of the show, I guess I have to make a pick. I don't want to bet one way or the other. I want to bet the over 2.5, and hopefully both guys are okay. But yeah, Jacob Malkoon and me haven't gone to lunch and hung out before, so Finney's a real friend and Jacob Malkoon is my boy, which is someone I've never met before, but I think we'd kick it off. I'll go towards Finney. Definitely the over 2.5, Finney by decision.
Yeah, I think Torres hits a lot harder with his hands as well. If wrestling gets completely negated here, Torres is the guy throwing the heavy artillery. With Malkoon, it's like, have we really seen that much great striking? Like, he knocked out, Petroski with his hip bone. There wasn't much else going on in that fight. Like, his stand-up game's a little bit suspect, and I struggle to see people. Like, Torres is a little bowling ball, man. I just struggle to see people. Anybody, let alone, and maybe Fluffy could put like a pace on him, but like I struggle to see Malkoon just like go out there, take him down over and over and over. It's just, I guess we'll have to see it. I would have to see it to believe it. So Finney's the pick for me. I like the overs as well. We got Jonathan McAuliffe taking on Oban Elliott. McAuliffe slight favorite at -134. Come back on Oban +115. You got
Okay, it'll probably cost me money. Why wouldn't it? But I will take Obon Elliott, a short plus money, right? And over on the Bookie Beatdown Discord, we got, you know, channel popping. Sometimes we'll put a list together that, you know, you might have a 10-fight parlay screwed by one guy. 6-fight parlay at mega odds. One guy blew it. Everybody on the card hit, but that one guy. And that guy gets added to this F this guy list. Obon Elliott is on the F this guy list. Because, man, he blew it bad in his last fight. He was like a 4-1 favorite and against what ended up being a really good fighter. So I don't want to fault him too much, but just a real letdown. When you look at the early portion of his career, the Welsh gangster, one of these classic, he's tough, he's durable. His striking is not high volume. He's a little bit low for my liking, but at the same time, you know, decent boxing combinations. I don't know for certain that he's got a judo base, but good hips. Get up game, not so terrible. But in that last fight with Sung Yun Ko, I don't want to say he quits. He got extremely demoralized that I can't keep this guy off of me, and he's way too strong. So he's at 6 feet tall, high center of gravity. This guy's coming under. He's getting his forehead right under my chin. He's pinning me up against the cage, and then he's routinely just taking me down over and over and over again. It's a bad look. Does that discredit everything else he had done? Yeah, and maybe not. And Paul actually tried to warn me about that one because of the Val Woodburn fight. And the dude got knocked down by Val Woodburn. He got taken down not once, two times, dog. So how good is Obon Elliott? Maybe not good at all. The fight with Basil Hafez wasn't terrible, but how much of that was we're overrating Basil Hafez because of the Jack Madalena fight? So there's some moving parts there. I don't want to bet this guy's the favorite anymore, and I don't trust him to fight for my dollar. I don't trust him to have any great intangibles. I think he's just kind of a bit of a generalist. Now I get him at plus money, so the opinion changes a little bit. It's like, okay, well, are they giving him plus money? This guy was 3-0. Sorry, 3-0 in the UFC, 1-0 in the Contender Series. Loses one fight to a good guy. And now all of a sudden he's plus money against McAuliffe? Are they writing him off too much? Is there too much of a buyback on the other direction? A recorrection of the line, let's say? No, I kind of think so. Because the problem with McAuliffe is that he's also 6 feet tall. So when you watch this guy fight, he only throws two moves. He's a southpaw. He's got a southpaw body kick, left body kick, and a straight left. That's it. Barely throws anything else. So whereas his last fight against Kevin Jousset, this is the frustrating part. Kevin Jousset is a BJJ, or sorry, is a judo black belt, right? Kevin Jousset shot zero takedowns. Didn't even try. He sat there and let this guy use two weapons to defeat him for 15 minutes. The third round, he woke up and he won the third round on all three judges' scorecards. It's too little too late. So Kevin Jousset didn't really force any type of grappling at all, not even try, and lost. His fight with Muhammad Otto took him down. Otto was beating him on the feet, and he latched onto this triangle choke. Fair. There's nothing to suggest that this guy's all that good. And in fact, I don't think his takedown defense is all that good. And I think Obon Elliott might be able to go out there and get back to what he was doing prior. Just take guys down. Three takedowns on Val Woodburn. He took down Cake Brito four times on the Contender Series. He had taken down Preston Parsons. Basil Hafez, no takedowns, but Basil's good. Sung Yung Ko, no takedowns. But that guy spent the whole time taking you down. He may go back to the well here and try to get a few takedowns. On top of that, his low volume, not great against McAuliffe, who may throw a little bit more than him, but I think he's going to be smart enough to realize this guy only does two things over and over. Figure out the rhythm, figure out the range. He's got a longer reach than you, but you're both 6 feet tall, so you're punching on an even playing field, and then get your way into a couple takedowns. Obon Elliott's got 5 fights in the UFC. This is his 5th fight in the UFC. McAuliffe is still young and developing and very green. I didn't think he looked good in the Contender Series. He won by first round triangle. I didn't think he looked that good. And then against Kevin Jousset, it was more so Kevin Jousset looked really bad than McAuliffe looked good. And maybe I'm being harsh on it. Maybe I am. But not every hometown guy is going to win, and not every favorite's going to win. I think Obon Elliott's got a plus money. I'm going to take a small poke here. When we talk about decision props, yeah, it's another one I think go to decision. Obon, not really the heaviest hitter. Nor does he have an extensive submission game. And the flip side to that, McAuliffe's not going to knock him out. And although McAuliffe throw up a triangle, triangles rarely work at the UFC level. Contender Series is a different story. Muhammad Otto had 4 fights when he fought him on the Contender Series. Then Muhammad Otto, his very next fight after McAuliffe, who he gave a go to, he lost to Zach Powell. And then his very next fight after that, he lost to Bobby Sullivan. Or not Bobby Sullivan, Bobby Poulter. He's on a 3-fight losing streak right now. Right? And that guy gave him a go literally 2 fights back. Kevin Jousset got cut. He fought for PFL. You remember that one? It was a couple months ago. Loses that too. Not good. Now you're the betting favorite over a guy who was a minus 450 favorite in his last fight, but shit the bed. It's closer to 50-50. It's closer to slight favorite Obon Elliott. So, yeah, for this line, I'll take Obon Elliott. The point being that if you don't want to just take a guy that's not that good in a fight that feels a little greasy, that it's going to decision. It's going over 2.5. It's going to decision. That might be a little chalky for your liking, but if you can find 2 or 3 fights that you're certain are hitting that over 2.5, put them together, and you're going to get plus money out of it. So, yeah, I sound like a broken record, I'm sure, but I'm going to take Obon Elliott by decision in this one over 2.5 rounds.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I can back Obon Elliott. I think he's very, very limited, and I think the wrestling is very questionable. It's giving up a lot of reach. We're over on the other side of the world. If it does go to decision, McAuliffe throws, like, basically he's got, like, a long body kick. He's got some submissions off of his back. Is Obon going to just hang out in his guard? It's possible, but McAuliffe is the side for me. I'm going to avoid the total on that one as well. All right, moving on down, we've got Yija taking on Con Offley, minus 200 for Yija. Offley, plus 170, who you got?
Yeah, I won't waste too much of your time here. It's like, what's there to really know? Con Offley's not really shown a whole lot. On the Ultimate Fighter, he looked okay, and then he made it to the finals against Mayron Santos. Started out so-so, not terrible, but eventually did get caught with the kind of right hand, gets knocked out, not the end of the world. His next fight was Muhammad Naimov. He really doesn't show you much. I want to say he's a former rugby player, but he's a short, stout, strong guy. I don't know that he's got depth of technique as much as he's got, you know, a decent little right hand, a decent little left hook. He tries to come forward as much as he can. And then in clinch type situations, he's pretty strong. The run, then he fights Ricardo Ramos his last time out. Ramos is one of these, finds a way to lose, and Ramos almost takes his back. He grabs the cage twice, and then he takes Ramos's back and chokes him out. Yitza's got a heck of a back take, man. If Yitza takes his back, he can submit Con Offley. If he doesn't, and Con Offley can just outwork him and be the stronger guy in the clinch, I think Con Offley's live. This line on Yitza is just not doing it for me. And the biggest thing with Yitza is he's not physically strong. So he's an excellent submission guy. But if he can't fall onto the submission, it's going to be a problem. A lot of these fights, he's landing 6, 5, 6 takedowns per fight. But as he's been taking on the better level of guys, he's either the one getting taken down and throwing up the submission, or he can't find a way to maneuver you. His fight with Gabriel Santos, 2 fights back in the UFC, Gabriel Santos knocked him down. Gabriel Santos took him down, but mostly just out-muscled him. He won on a scorecards of 130-27 and 2 scorecards of 30-26, 2 judges having given him a 10-8 round for the knockdown. But more so, it's just he just can out-muscle this guy. Fall into the guard. You have short little arms. He's not grabbing an armbar. Who's armbarring in men's MMA in 2026? It's not the most popular technique because it's not super effective in this day and age when you're getting punched in the face and a guy's got a glove on and a guy can grab something and a guy can elbow you or he can kick out. Like, there's just a lot of things that could go wrong. So these guys that are known for quick submissions, I don't know that I want to get behind it. A win over Weston Wilson, what does that tell you? Con Offley's a sizable enough betting underdog that if this fight does not hit the ground, it's just going to be a stand-up battle. Is Yitza that much better of a striker than Con Offley? Is he definitively going to beat him? Like, I don't think so. And Offley, meanwhile, short little reach on him, has to come forward, has to step through. But he showed in that Ramos fight, here's a guy that's got 10-plus fights in the UFC, and here's a guy with a dangerous submission game, and I'm just going to break him down within the clinch, take him into the deeper waters, and that's where you're going to have success. That's where most guys have success with Yitza. So, yeah, it's near the bottom, man. There's not a whole lot of confidence, certainly, but more so than that, it's just I don't want a 2-to-1 Yitza play and then have him just flop around, look for arm bars, try to grab the back, fall off the top, and get out muscled by Con Offley. If it's close, Offley again should figure to get a bit of a rub from the judges if possible. That I don't want to get too invested in it. So, smart guy's going to pass altogether. Guy that's got to make a play on everything in the PRP. If it hits, if all these dogs hit and all these 50-50 plays come on our side, oh, is it going to be a big one this week? Oh, is it going to be a big one? And speaking of O, we're going to go with Kane Offley. That's going to be the pick. Don't love it, but that is going to be the play for me.
Yeah, Con Offley has kind of shown us that he will cheat to get the win, too. And a plus 170, plus 180. I mean, I think you could do worse. So, yeah, I don't really understand laying big chalk on Yija Conoffly. I mean, he did get knocked out by Myron Santos, and Santos isn't some sort of, like, power puncher, but he is a very technical, skilled fighter. I think this is a step down on a technique standpoint. And yeah, coming off of a massive win where he was, like, minus 1,500 against Weston Wilson, it's like, okay, like, I mean, Weston Wilson had no business being in the UFC in the first place. So, dog or pass situation. We'll see where the market goes, but I'll probably have something on Conoffly as the week rolls on here. Moving on down, we got Dom Marfan taking on Kim Sang-uk. Minus 150 for Dom Marfan. Comeback on Uk. Kim, how do I say his name? What's his last name? Kim?
Are we going with Kim? I go with Kim because, you know, the legend himself, Dongyoung Kim, if someone was to call him Kim Dongyoung, I would feel certain ways about it. So Kim is his last name.
There we go.
Sang-wook is his first name. They'll have that established.
Who you got here?
I'm going to... Here's the problem with Dom Marfan is that he's not all that good. His striking is almost near non-existent. His cardio is really not all that good, is that he knows what it takes to win a round, just control time and a quick little takedown. BJJ brown belt, good enough grappling. Both fights with Quinlan Salkill, he does really good in the early portion. Then Quinlan Salkill, a little too much, you know, exposes him. But, man, Paul and I took a heck of a beating when he first fought this Yuji Efovega on Road to the UFC. Or that guy was coming off just a killer win, was looked to be a tournament favorite. Big guy, athletic guy, looked like Efovega was going to be the tournament favorite. And Dom Marfan just really held him up against the cage and forced constant grappling. And they're both tired by the end of it, but he won the fight because he's the one that's pressuring you into the cage, and he's the one that's fighting for wrist control, and he's the one that's maybe attempting to hike up a single leg. But he did the bare minimum to win all of the rounds. Even the third round, he's toppling over, gassed, but his opponent's making mistakes, and he's a little bit older, and he's fought in prospects before, and he just knew what to do. His fight with Jung-Hyung Park, it's kind of mostly the same. Jung-Hyung Park took him down four times. He took Jung-Hyung Park down three times. He would just do a little bit more.
Reversals were key for him in that.
And it's like he'll be losing 2 minutes and 20 seconds of the round, and he'll hit a reversal, and he'll win the last 2 minutes and 40 seconds of the round and win the round. It's never going to look super spectacular. It's that my boy Daniel Levy, he would say he's a weasel. He's going to weasel these rounds through. But the guy's a winner. He knows how to win. It's not impressive. It's not something I'm looking to back personally, but it's a path of victory. Sang-woo Kim, he's 32 years old, so he's more of a finished product. Korean fighter, very strong in the clinch himself. I think that's going to be the key difference. We did see him get taken down multiple times. He's fought on Contender Series now two different seasons. And so in the first season, Road to the UFC. In the first time, he beat Kazuma Maruyama, and he did get taken down in that fight, but then he gets on top. He gets a Dars choke and a bad attempt. He subs him. Then he fought Rong Zhu. The Rong Zhu fight's a really good fight. Unfortunately, Rong Zhu wins. Now Rong Zhu's in the UFC. He goes back to the building block, comes into a second season of Road to the UFC, and I think he's looked good since then. Physically, he's strong. He did give up three takedowns to Keiichi Kamaya, but when he gets back up, he's got way more firepower, and that there's the difference. Dom Marfan, all of the guys he's been able to take down and control, they all get opportunities to hit him and hurt him, that they're also tired, or they're also sloppy strikers. I don't think that's the case for Kim. I think he'll probably get taken down a few times, and from a live betting perspective, Dom Marfan takes him down in the first round, halfway through the first round, maybe wins the first round, then you're going to get an even better price. But some point in the second or the third round, he's going to stand him up and he's going to stiff him. So I got the Korean fighter to get the job done, likely by knockout, and hope for the best. I'm going to get neutralized for a bunch of periods of time. When I'm not getting neutralized, that's that period of violence that we're going to capitalize on. So, give me Kim.
I just, rather than getting exposed to like a side in this fight, like I'm more interested in the over 2.5, which is like minus 150. Both guys pretty good grapplers. The two times that Dom Marfan has been finished are against Quill and Salkild, who got to his back, got a rear naked choke. I suppose he gassed out, but I think on the road to the UFC, he showed that, like, even though he was looking a little bit tired against Efovega, Villa really gassed even more than him. And like Don Marfan was kind of able to neutralize, slow down. Like he's trying to keep such a slow pace in these fights just to get to the final bell. I could see it being very, very close when you get to the final bell. But yeah, an over 2.5 is how I'm going to attack this fight. We got Sebastian Salai taking on Keichiro Nakamura. Salai is a minus 130 favorite to come back on Nakamura, plus 110. I'm kind of surprised Salai, who's been like over the course of the Road to UFC tournament, has been like one of like the, he's been pretty big favorite in every single fight. Nakamura, on the other hand, seemed like a guy who was a bit of a surprise to get to the finals here. So I'm surprised that we take this card over to, you know, Salai's home country. And it's pretty much a pick 'em here. What am I missing, Cody? Because Salai seems like a pretty easy money line selection to me. What about you?
Yeah. I hear you. Salai's a karate black belt. His hands are super low, but like excellent movement, excellent counter striking abilities. And coming into the season of a Road to the UFC, it looked like he was going to be the odds on favorite to win the whole thing. And now he finds himself in the finals. The thing is that right before the Road to the UFC, he had fought this Taysar Malone for internal MMA, where he wins a split decision. And you do start to see the limitations to his game. He's not Wonderboy Thompson, you know, but he's got his hands low and he's bouncing and he is there to get hit. If he's not constantly evading, guys that can pressure forward on him are going to have some mark. I don't think that his chin is absolutely unbreakable. I do think that somebody should be able to catch him. Don't think his cardio is all that good, and he's 32 years old. So this version that you see of him is the best version you're likely to see of him. Keichiro Nakamura, man, this guy is the dark horse of the tournament. He's only 27, right? So he's 5 years younger. And when you see him fight to fight, he's getting better. And when they interviewed him before the first fight on Road to the UFC, he was like, I watched Conor McGregor fight, and I was like, this is cool. I'm going to do this. And so he's really not been fighting for a whole long. As an amateur, he went 5-0, knocked out four of those opponents. Lost his pro debut by third round submission. It's his pro debut. And since then, he's been knocking out absolutely everybody. So he fought this Yunjin Park, who's another strong Korean fighter. And he was a plus 285 underdog against Yunjin Park, who's supposed to just take him down and roll him up. Yeah, but couldn't take him down. And this kid is Japanese Conor McGregor. He's not as good as Conor McGregor, but he slips really nice. He's got a beautiful straight left hand. He causes like a false sense of security. And beyond that, he's got a lot of power. The second fight was Kwon Lee. Kwon Lee's stronger. He's a little more of a generalist. He's a little more flat-footed and come forward, but just like a lot more experience, a full-grown man. And I thought there was moments of that fight where it's like, oh, the kid's getting frustrated, like the bouncing's not always working, or he gets hit. But nah, man, and he looks like a good enough prospect. He's got a lot of power. He's making improvements. He's got less than 10 pro fights, so he continues to get more comfortable. And Sebastian Salai, yeah, the longer the fight goes, I don't think his durability is as good as it's going to get. I don't think his cardio is as good as it's going to get. And I think he's supposed to roll this guy over. He's supposed to go out there, and he's a karate black belt taking on this kid. But this kid's coming to his own, and like any tournament, this guy's the number one seed, and this guy's the number eight seed. It doesn't mean the number eight seed guy can't pull the upset. It doesn't mean that guy's not the better guy, even against Kwon Lee. So he upsets at plus 285 and knocks him out in the second round, knee up the middle. Against Kwon Lee, he's a minus 130 favorite, so it's near pick'em, right? Wins is a 29-28, lost a round, but made adjustments, showed that he could fight the 15 minutes, added to his repertoire, added to his experience, that I kind of think he has a chance to go out there and spring the upset. But in my mind, it's still an upset, just like you described it as well. And by the money line, it's near even money. So there's not a whole lot of money to make off Nakamura coming out here and getting the job done. But I'm just going to look at this one for who is the better prospect. Who's going to have a higher ceiling? Who's going to do better a year from now or 2 years from now? Nakamura going to fight in the UFC for the next 3-4 years. I think he's an okay prospect. And I think he's going to continue to get better. Salai could win this fight. And then does he win any other fight? Like, he's good by a road to the UFC standards, but is this guy a top 40 guy in the UFC? Like, I don't think so. So I think I'm going to lean Nakamura ever so slightly. But again, this stuff's all at the bottom. I'm not looking to lose my house on a fight that I can 100% see going even. The lines maker agrees it's about even. Most pundits feel that Salai should win, yet the lines even feels like it's maybe trappy of sorts. But yeah, for me, it's going to be a small little Nakamura shot.
We got Lawrence Louis taking on Sulang Gangbro. Sulang Rangbo is a minus 260 favorite to come back on Lawrence Louis, plus 220. Kind of like I think he's like one of these interim gyms. I may be wrong, but or not. What's the name of that Chinese?
Enbo.
Enbo. Is he an Enbo kid?
He's an Enbo kid, and he's Suma Derji's cousin.
He's what, 20 years old. Kid's kind of blasted out of a cannon. I mean, the win over Sim Kai Zhang was a very solid win. Sim Kai's no putts by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah,
knocked out Peter Danso as a pretty big underdog in the first round. Kid's striking is super, is flashy, but like he's got a lot of power, a lot of speed, a lot of skill, and there's not much tape on him out there. And obviously at this age, he's getting better and better. What I've seen with Lawrence Louis in both of his fights, really, like even round one against Van Niem, there's no like knockdown listed, but it's like he eats a lot of damage. He doesn't wear that damage all that well. Got knocked down twice in this fight that he was a massive favorite against a relative unknown who had lost to like really suspect level of opponents. It was supposed to be a layup in round, and like he had to just like edge that one out with takedowns, was knocked down twice. Yeah, I think his durability is highly questionable. Sulang Gangbro was able to like went the distance in his last fight. So I feel like we're getting a little bit of a discount on like the unders in this fight, because I really do think Sulang Gangbro is going to knock his head off. Whether it's in the first round, second round, I don't really know, but like the KO price is pretty playable right now. It's like plus 160, plus 167. That's most likely outcome to me, because it's just like we've seen Lawrence Louis over and over, and even on like some of his regional fights, it's like he doesn't wear damage all that well. And closing the distance with this young and improving Chinese fighter, I think it's going to be a dangerous fight for him. Louis could turn this into a grappling fight, use a little bit of a vet lesson, hold it up against the cage, yada, yada, yada. But it's like that first fight for Louis on Contenders or on road to the UFC, like kind of showed me everything I need to know about this, like about his prospects as we get to the next level. And maybe it's a little bit too much too soon for Sulang Rangbo, but everything that we saw from him on the tournament, like, I liked what I saw. So I think Sulang Rangbo gets a knockout win here against Lawrence Louis. Who you got?
Hey, I don't feel great about it. That I love Sulang, bro, but this is not the greatest style clash. If he wins, he's going to knock him out. Completely agree with all those points. But I don't know enough about his defensive wrestling that Lawrence Louis may just take him down. Going into the tournament, Lawrence Louis was one of the tournament favorites based on he's at a city kickboxing. And although he can kickbox a little bit, is that he's got some wrestling in his back pocket. That fight with Qinghai Zhang, he got 6 takedowns on 12 attempts. He was shooting the entire time. Just like Paul mentioned, he got dropped twice in that fight. He's on skates. I bet him in that fight. He's like minus 450 or something stupid. I get a minus 450 who stands up and both of his legs go out when he hits the deck. Ref could have stopped the fight, but they wanted to see a body that day, and they let it continue, and he fought his way back in, and he won. But oh my God, not a great look. Sulang Bro, meanwhile, he's, and I know I mentioned this in the last fight, he's a tournament dark horse. The problem with his fights for WLF is that WLF doesn't post them on a YouTube or on a video player. What they do is they take highlights of the fight, and they'll post that on their social media. So you got to go dig through Chinese social media, and you will find these posts and their highlights. And in these highlights, he's beating people up. But you don't really know how good his ground game is. You think, okay, he's got 3 losses. Started off his career 1-3. Yeah, the last time he lost was in 2023. It's 3 years ago. He's 17 years old at the time, Paul. He had 4 pro debut. He's 16. He's an Enbo kid. He's at an orphanage in China, and they're like, you fight now. You fight now. Suma Derji's cousin, also out of Enbo. What's he up to these days? Fighting in the UFC. This kid looked pretty much the same thing, man. He's long. He covers ground very quick. He beat Peter Daniso in his debut as a 2-1 underdog, but not just beat him. I mean, he absolutely sparked him, knocked him out. And then against Sim Kay Yong's a BJJ black belt. So he's looking to slow this thing down. And Sulang Bro wasn't really there to be held. Lawrence Louis is going to try to go to that game plan. Take this guy down and hold him down as good as you can. But, you know, just like Paul mentioned, against Sulang Bro, if you're not taking him down, it's not going to be a good time. Sim Kay Yong went 0-9 on takedowns on this guy. So taking him down not going to be super easy. Lawrence Louis, he's 29. It's not old. He's 9 years older than Sulang Bro. So Sulang Bro is going to be making impressive improvements. And similar to what I just said about the last fight, it's maybe Lawrence Louis could win this fight, but who's the better prospect? Who do you expect to see fighting in the UFC 3 years from now? I don't think Lawrence Louis is ever going to crack the top 15. This kid could be really good. This kid could be, you know, a next top Chinese fighter. This kid could be a Song Yadong, a top 10, maybe top 5 at his best kind of guy. I think he's legit. He's got back class. He's 20, but he's been fighting professionally for 4 years. He's been training full-time for a decade. He's got more than enough gunpowder to take out Lawrence Louis standing. It really does come to his get-up game, his ability to stuff the takedowns. And if his last fight was any indicator of that, it's really not that bad. It's coming along in the right direction. So I will take Sulang Bro as well. Just hoping to get a better price tag. You know, that's it. Maybe I'm being stingy with it. You talked about the last one, Kichi Nakamura versus Sebastian Sazalet. It's like they got it close to even money because what are you supposed to expect? Two guys making their debut. I'd love to see that here and get some even money in Sulang Bro, but it ain't going to happen.
And finally, one of the fights I frankly, it's going to be the curtain jerker, but it's like one of the fights I'm actually looking most forward to because two guys. The line surprises me. The line definitely surprises me because I backed Bat Bayer both times on the contenders. And he was like a small underdog in those fights. I think I had like plus 150 something. It's not listed there that way. But like against Yamauchi, I believe I had like plus 150. Because like those Road to the UFC fights, like the numbers were going like mental. What you see on like odds aggregators, is just like they would get absolutely slapped and going like, bad. Somehow I got kicked out of my own chat there. I don't know how that happened, but you can hear me now. We're good.
Yeah, no, we're all good. I thought it was on my end. I was like, why does this sometimes happen? It's on your end. So we're good.
I'm not sure how I kicked myself out of my own meeting here, but I was expecting Aaron Tao has been a massive favorite every single fight over the course of this tournament. And then now he's a slight underdog against Namsarai, Mongolian murderer. And like this guy's super, super fun. Really good at taking the back, but like has murderous power punching as well. Problem for him in this matchup is like Aaron Tao is about as durable as they come. He's got the crazy Maori face tats, but like guy can take a ton of punishment. He's super, super strong. And I understand Namsarai Bat Bayer is probably gonna have a lot of success early. Like that's what he does against everybody. But like the one fight he did lose was against who I call the alphabet. Nyam Jargul Tumendemberal. And it's just like, yeah, he had lots of success early in that fight. And then the cardio fell off of a cliff. Over the course of the contender series, we keep calling it contender series because it kind of is, but Road to the UFC. Over the course of his run on Road to the UFC, he never really got extended. I just struggle to see most guys, frankly, at this weight class get Aaron Tao out of there in the first 7.5 minutes. I wish the prices on like around 3-4, like they opened them so short because I was like, this could be a really good spot, but it's like 10-1 10-1 is way too short for a round three prop. So it's kind of priced that way. It's unfortunate. Bet Online opens those things so short, and everyone just copies the freaking market these days. So it's like they're kind of killing a lot of those round props these days, to be perfectly honest, by being the openers and opening them so short, because everyone just copies, and then it's just like, well, it's hard to really justify betting Aaron Tao to win in round three. But how I see this kind of playing out is like that buyer gets a jump on him real fast, land some big strikes, maybe even like gets the takedown, gets to the back, but he won't be able to complete the choke. Tao takes over the second half of the fight. One of the fights I'm really looking forward to, absolute like two absolute warriors that I could see have some success at the UFC level, but Tao at 125, the durability, and I think the cardio will prevail at the end. That's my pick for this fight. What about you?
Yeah, Aaron Tao is basically like that Neil Siri from back in the days, an old-timey flyweight. The guy's 32 years old, looking to make his UFC debut officially, but just tough, man. That's what he does better than anything, is that he's very, very tough. He can cause you to fight, and I do think that that eventually breaks through. Bat Bayar, good-looking prospect. Mongolian, who doesn't love that? Very physically strong, only 25 years old. But yeah, for a guy that's got a 9-1 record, is he burns very, very hot. He has never been to decision ever. The loss that Paul mentioned, the first round, he doesn't even look great. The second round, he's done. He's absolutely gassed out. And so Tao, it's all about durability, man. He's 5'4", short, stout little guy. I guess they're both 5'4", but short, stout little guy, throws mostly hooks. And it's not he's the hardest guy to take down, is that he's not easy to hold down. His fight with Elijah Smith, who doesn't like Elijah, right? Dad fought on The Ultimate Fighter. He's a longtime MMA veteran. This kid wrestled in college, powerbombed a guy. The first round, Smith takes him down on 3 of 4 attempts. Minute of control time. Second round, Smith takes him down on 2 of 4 attempts. Minute of control time. The third round, he goes 0 for 3 on takedowns. He cannot take him down. And all of a sudden, he got outstruck 56-31 in the third round. Tao won the third round over Elijah Smith. A good prospect. Now you go to road to UFC, it's been mostly the same thing. His last fight was tough, but he fought a good guy. Was tough, but he's got power. If he's losing a round, he can still land that big shot. It's hard to hold down. It's hard to take down. All that proves to be true. I think eventually you're going to have Bat Bayar. The problem with, not a problem, with Mongolian fighters, it's in their blood. They're mountain people. They're going to wrestle. They're going to wrestle. And in a lot of Mongolians' cases, himself especially included, is when they wrestle, they go 100%. They're not trying to set something up and chain wrestle. Well, they are chain wrestling, but they're going to go 3, 4, 5 techniques at 100% capacity and bowl you over. Now, Tao's got a really, really good get-up game. So he gets up. Now he gets bowled over. Now he gets up. Tao's not going to be tired. This is how he fights. You're going to say Namsrai Bat Bayar start to suck wind. And as he starts to suck wind, the striking exchanges will favor Tao. And the later the fight goes, Tao's been to decision, if need be, just went to decision in his last fight. Bat Bayar has never been to decision. So his best path is finish Tao within the first round and a half. Mm-hmm. And Tao's just very, very durable. So like none of this stuff, Tao's been finished before. I watched the tape on the regional scene back in the day, but like it's going to take a lot to take him out. And even though Bat Bayar has beaten some guys, nobody of this quality. Now, again, when you talk about who's the better prospect, well, Tao's 32 at flyweight. So yeah. Put him in the UFC now and let him go on a run now. Whereas Bat Bayar is 25 years old. Like, he'll lose this fight and go, where did I go wrong? Maybe you got to just like not be so aggressive. Maybe you got to work on your cardio. Maybe you got to work on setting things up. And he'll be okay. He'll be none of these fights are UFC fights for the record. We're breaking them down on the UFC card, but Tapology's got it listed that the last 4 fights on the card are not UFC fights. They're considered road to the UFC finals.
Tomato, tomato.
I know, but what I'm saying is the loser is not guaranteed a contract.
No.
Tao's chance to go into the UFC and start winning meaningful fights at 32 is now. He will take advantage. Bat Bayar may not get signed to the UFC, or maybe he does, but one way or another, he'll be in the UFC at some point, just maybe a little bit too soon for him right this very moment.
Yeah. The safest play, I think, in this fight, probably over 1.5 is a little bit juiced. It's like -180. Flyweight fight, Aaron Tao. I mean, it's going to be, if Bat Bayar gets him, then good on him. But like, I see 7.5 minutes of here, probably 75-80% of the time between the two of them. I really struggled to see Bat Bayar just absolutely fold him like he has been doing to a whole bunch of other opponents in the road to the UFC. So if it happens, it happens. But yeah, the over, I wish the round three for Tao was longer than 10-1, but it's like maybe when later in the week some other books will like offer something a little bit more generous than that. But like 10-1 on a round three prop, it's like you just need so many things to like go your, you have to get to the money round, and then you need, you know, every, like for 10-1, it's pretty, yeah, it's not very generous. I will say that. Like I rarely ever bet a 10-1 round three prop, even though that's how I kind of see it playing out. Tao could very well win a decision by taking over the second half of the fight as well. Anyway, we are just about out of time, Cody. But before we go, hit him with the PRP.
All right, this week we are going to go tight fights, but we're going to go with Alexander Volkanovski, Dan Hooker, dog number one. Other than if you're a pimp who leaves a day with a hooker and actually makes money. So, I mean, maybe I'm setting myself up for disaster. But we are going to go with the hangman to get the job done. So, Volkanovski, hooker, Rafael Fiziev, dog number two. Tai Tuivasa, dog number three. I'll take Talos. I don't know. I got mixed thoughts there. Anyways, Quinlan Salkill. We're going to go with Billy Alacana, Cam Roston, Torrance Finney, dog number four. Obon Elliott, dog number five. Con Offley, dog number six. Sung Young Kim, dog number seven. Kichi Nakamura, dog number eight. Salang Bro.
A lot of dogs.
And then Aaron Tapp. Yeah, a lot of dogs. But again, a lot of them are like, there's a couple plus 110s. So you could look at a Rafael Fiziev plus 105. Is he really an underdog? Or Obon Elliott is like plus 115. Is he really an underdog? Torrance Finney is plus 125. Is he really an underdog? So it sounds a lot better than it is, but like most things, last week it was favorite heavy. There are two underdogs on the card. Gaethje, happy to be on the right side of that. Charles Johnson, totally on the wrong side of that. The other dogs I like got canceled, right? Like there was no Michael Johnson fight and there was no something else that I like. Anyways, doesn't matter. Point being, there was just two underdogs last week. You're going to get one of these. This is a 14 fight card, right? Mm-hmm. Could be 400 or 500 dogs. So we just got to make sure we're on the right side of them. And don't be ashamed of passing for a few fights here or there. There's a lot of fights on this card. Not everyone's going to make sense. You don't have a solid impression of all of them. Then you don't necessarily have to. You got a buffet here, right? Paul and I are the waiters. Tell you what we like, but you can pick anything you want, man. You don't have to just load up on the cheap pizza and mozzarella sticks. There might be something else you like. Yeah. And again, this weekend as a whole, there's on top of these things, you've got a ONE Championship. You've got an Aries FC on Fight Pass. You've got a Fury FC on Fight Pass. Uriah Faber's got an A1 Combat. There's a UAE Warriors. There's an Octagon MMA on YouTube. There's a BKB event. They're just, again, 14 fights. Don't find yourself caught up on one guy lost and it blew my entire weekend. Unless it's like that guy was one of your bona fide locks. Then whatever. We all run into that problem. But yeah, lots to go over. I'm excited for this weekend. I'm excited for this card. I enjoy it. But, yeah, got to make it a profitable one. It's the bottom line.
Yeah, 14 fights. I mean, a 14-fight parlay. I mean, you're rich if it hits, but, like...
Just wait, baby. Just wait.
That shouldn't be your entire weekend, you know?
Yeah, fair, fair.
Like, don't
awesome,
do anything.
Awesome single bets, too.
Things can go wrong in literally... Honestly, even, what, who's the biggest favorite on the card? That was Killen Salkill. I'd be pretty surprised if Killen Salkill doesn't show up and show out in that fight. But like Talisson Teixeira is like the next biggest favorite per the odds right at this moment. Him and Rousen are pretty close, but it's like Thailand's a freaking nuke. Would you be surprised whatsoever? Absolutely not.
No.
So yeah, there's so many fights, so many cards. Don't go so heavy this week that you can't bet next week. That's a rule that's easy to say, sometimes hard to follow, but you got to be able to, like, you know, on a losing week. I'm almost, like, talking to myself right now. After a losing week, be able to go out there and fire the next week. So that's where my head's at as we head into UFC 225. Lots of regional stuff and all of that. If you want all that stuff from Cody, the link is in the description of this video or podcast. But that is it for us this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. For Cody, I'm Paul. Say goodbye and good luck.